Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. The Baltimore Speaker Series, presented by Stevenson University, will wrap up its current season tomorrow evening with three speakers delving into where America stands today on issues of racism and reconciliation. Jason Riley, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, has shared his thoughts about race, education, the economy, and more for two decades as a columnist for The Wall Street Journal. Morris Dees founded the Southern Poverty Law Center, a public interest law firm which monitors hate groups and devises legal strategies to protect citizens. And Michelle Norris, a trusted journalist, co-hosted NPR's All Things Considered for years and founded the Race Card Project. Michelle Norris joins us on the line. Welcome to On the Record, Michelle.
Hi, so good to be with you, Sheila, and so good to connect again.
It is good to connect again. Racism and reconciliation, big topic, Michelle. How will you approach that?
Well, you know, through a series of simple questions. I mean, that's how we solve problems. That's how we examine problems, whether they're big problems or small problems. And it's interesting that you frame the question that way, because race and racism and the idea of reconciliation and the hard truths that we have to examine to get to reconciliation are such big issues that sometimes people crouch or back away thinking, how could we ever solve those problems? They're big, they're intractable, they're just too, they create too much indigestion, I don't even want to try that. The way to actually to confront those issues or to examine those issues is through a series of small questions and discourse and listening, and that's what we'll try to do with the conversation between the three of us, and also with the conversation with the questions from the audience.
Well, have you found in having conversations like this that there's common ground, basic opinions that almost everyone in an audience can agree on?
No. No. I mean, there's not always common ground. And that's because people come to this through their own experiences and their own prism based on life's experience. And I think that one of the things that I've learned in running the Race Card Project now, which is a very large collective narrative that examines issues of race and cultural identity, is that I'm more interested in creating bridges so that people can examine each other's lives. But, you know, with the notion of a bridge, you go back and forth. You don't cross a bridge but once and then stay in one area. You're usually going back and forth. Think about in Baltimore, all the bridges that you cross when you're going from one end of the city to the other. Well, examining the lives of others is sort of the same thing. And the goal is not always to get to a point where everyone agrees with each other or get to a point where you find common ground, but recognize that in a country that is as big and diverse as this, that we have to figure out how to examine a lot of different perspectives and a lot of different points of view, and that, you know, alternative examining, it's interesting, the CEO of Apple this week talked about the difference between alternative points of view and alternative facts, and that we need to embrace the notion of alternative points of view and let go of this idea that there are alternative facts, that people have different truths that they embrace and that they experience in their life, and we have to figure out how to examine, you know, this sort of manifold experiences that people have without setting up the false expectation that at the end of a difficult discussion like that, in just an hour's time, that everyone is going to agree.
As you know, you and your fellow panelists are coming to Baltimore 2 years, almost exactly 2 years after Freddie Gray was mortally injured while in police custody, 2 years after the riot that followed his funeral. How does that shape your approach to this conversation in Baltimore?
Well, this is part of a series of conversations that have been taking place in several cities, and each of them is, no pun intended, colored by the local events. And so when we come to a city like Baltimore, we are very cognizant of what happened to Freddie Gray, what happened in the aftermath of the death of Freddie Gray, the cases that are still being adjudicated, the sort of long tail of court cases, the examination and the investigation by the Justice Department, and the truths and realities that were discovered when people sort of unpeeled the social forces that were behind that encounter that happened in Sandtown. And so that will be a part of the discussion in Baltimore. I mean, we'll talk about Black Lives Matter. We'll talk about activist movements. We'll talk about the kinds of things that lead to these kinds of encounters, but also not just the statistics, but how there are attitudes and beliefs and assumptions that often contribute to those kinds of things, and to figure out how to find solutions and answers that allow people to to figure out how to get past some of this, so that police departments can figure out how to have a better relationship with the community, that the community can feel something close to trust with the officers that are there to protect and to serve them. That in places like Baltimore, and you're well familiar with Baltimore, you know, being a city of fiefdoms, you can live in one part of Baltimore and very rarely visit the rest of the city. Or if you visit the rest of the city, it's almost like you have an exit visa. You're just passing through, and you don't really understand what is happening. I mean, there are people who live in Baltimore City and Baltimore County who watched what happened in the aftermath of the Freddie Gray death, and were surprised to learn about the conditions of people who lived in that community, even though they lived just a few blocks or, in some cases, just a few miles away. So we're hoping that events like this will allow people to actually discuss that kind of thing in Baltimore, but also what that represents for the nation as a whole.
That's journalist and author Michelle Norris here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. You know her voice from her years on NPR co-hosting All Things Considered. She'll be in Baltimore tomorrow for the Baltimore Speaker Series presented by Stevenson Universities. Michelle, these days, how much of conflict over race is really about class?
Well, they're almost flip sides of a coin, or different sides of a prism of a much larger issue. I mean, when we think about the definition of race and how we understand it, it's a, you know, multidimensional, highly adaptive system that is based on power. It's based on usually unequal distribution of resources among different groups. And the group that holds the power is the group that controls the institutions, and they control the distribution, you know, of those resources and access to opportunities. And so you can have that discussion, you know, talking about skin color, but a big part of that is also about class and about income and about access to education. And often when people think about race, they automatically assume that we're only talking about skin color, and it is much more multidimensional than that. And that's, again, one of the lessons that I've learned from running the Race Card Project for the last 6 years, is that we almost need new terminology, because when people think about race, they usually think about it in a very narrow way. It's usually binary, white people, black people trying to figure out how to get along with each other. It's usually rooted in a civil rights construct, which means that we're thinking about race as opposed, you know, by focusing primarily on conflicts of the past. And that's important, because the past does provide some sort of pretext and context. But at the same time, I think about race in a broader way, where I almost think about it more in terms of identity, cultural identity, and that identity frame includes lots of things. It includes income. It includes skin color. It includes where you live. Sometimes it's geographic. It's much broader than that. So we really do, when we talk about race and when we talk about racism and the effects of bias and prejudice, class absolutely has to be a part of that conversation.
The Race Card Project, you started that 7 years ago after you published your memoir, The Grace of Silence, and you sort of give a whole new meaning to what's often a pejorative phrase, playing the race card. Tell us what the Race Card Project is, briefly, and how many people have taken part.
It started simply. I wrote a book about my family's very complex racial legacy, and I knew when I went out into the world, I was on a 35-city book tour, that I would be asking people to engage in a conversation about race. And I know that it's sometimes difficult for people, so I invited them to participate in an exercise. Think about the word race, then think about how you would distill your thoughts into one sentence, and to make things interesting, that sentence could only have six words. And I asked people to submit their thoughts on postcards. Your thoughts, six words, please send them to me. I printed up about 200 postcards, and an amazing amount came back to me. More than 30% came back to me, and so I kept printing those postcards. And over time, I got my publisher to print the postcards. We distributed them all over the country, and over time it jumped into a social media space. So it wasn't just about the postcards. People were submitting them digitally, and I created a website and invited people to visit the website and then submit their submissions via the website. And so now, more than 6 years, almost 7 years later, we have officially archived more than 50,000 stories. And while it started with just six words, increasingly, after about the first year, people would explain how they came to their six words, and that's where the narrative archive came in. It's not just a series of six-word little essays or haikus. It's people then backing that up with their testimony about how they came to this idea, their memories, their thoughts, their reminiscences, their anthems, their laments, their perspectives. And they would fill this in with pictures, and they'd sign their name to things that you often don't even hear people say out loud in public, and that's one of the amazing things about the project for me, is that it's become this amazing reservoir of trust, where people feel that this is a space where they can speak their truth without being shouted down or barked away from the table. And it's a very multidimensional view of the experience of race and cultural identity as lived by lots of different Americans. The majority of the submissions come from white Americans. The remaining 47% come from a broad mix of people who represent several different ethnic backgrounds, several different religious backgrounds, several different frames that have nothing to do with skin color, but they're talking about being a member of the LGBTQ community, or they're talking about being a military veteran and feeling like because of their military experience in Iraq or Afghanistan or years ago in Vietnam or maybe Korea, that they feel like they're in a totally different social cohort that is marching to the beat of a different drummer than everybody else in their lives because they once wore a uniform and they've never been able to see the world in quite the same way. So it's been a really rich and wonderful education for me, an opportunity through this taproot to go into communities in every state in 62 different countries and really understand identity and otherness and sort of the intimate aspects of how people see the world.
A wonderful resource you'll be bringing into this conversation tomorrow night. Michelle, thank you.
Thank you, Sheila. Good to be with you.
More information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org, as well as a link to the Race Card Project and a link to my interview with Michelle when she published her book, The Grace of Silence. I'm Sheila Cast. Very glad you've been listening this morning. Join us again tomorrow.